This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Martha Mendoza from Porto Protocol. We're going to be talking about reusing bottles. We met at the London Wine Fair yesterday. I was watching your presentation and you were talking about some of the results from your, was it called Reuse Ready, was it?
Last year it was called the Bottle Collection Initiative because we, in fact, we collected all the bottles from the event. And this year we were there to launch the Reuse Ready campaign.
Okay. How many bottles did you guys collect?
We collected 20,000 bottles.
Okay. But there was a large variation, wasn't there?
Yes. We analyzed 1,097 or something because at one point Sustainable Wine Solutions, who had that Herculean task, realized that there was no need to analyze anymore, that we had so much data out of it, especially taking into account that there were 947 different models from the sample we were analyzing.
For this to be really useful, it needs to be at scale. And to be at scale, you're going to have all sorts of problems with there's such a diverse range of bottles out there. And I can't imagine any producer wanting their wine in 15,000 different bottles going onto a supermarket shelf. You know, there's that whole, we want consistency. And also if you're packaging, you want things to be the same. So if you're going to do it at scale, you need to be able to supply large amounts of bottles to companies like in Bristol, in Cirque, who are a massive bottle filling operation in the UK now. They bought the old park from Accolade. But they're a glass manufacturer. They bought that bottling facility so they could make virgin new glass and fill it up. And for it to work in the UK in scale, you need someone like a massive filling operation to use them. But then to do that, you need a large amount of bottles, which means you're going to get a huge range of bottles. And then because you've got this massive range of bottles, they need to be sorted. And if there's a little difference, then maybe it won't run through the bottling line very well, because bottling lines tend to be quite temperamental to a particular shape or a particular bottle. So how do you overcome those problems?
Various things in regards to what you're saying. First of all, and that was one of the findings that came out of the study we did. It was what we call research in action. But bear in mind that this was not academic, nor had any intentions of being so. One of the findings was that there were, from 1,097 bottles that were analyzed by Sustainable Wine Solutions, there were like 900 that were different. And this looks scary. And my God, how is this possible?
Yeah.
But then they were so similar. And so you mostly had, and I can't remember the exact percentage, you mostly had bottles between 29 centimeters and 31 centimeters. And you mostly had bottles between Burgundy and Bordeaux. For me, that's one of the most important insights that came out of this research in action that we did, that goes to the point that you're raising, or to the challenge that you're raising. Bottles might be very different, but they are so similar. So I wonder if the producer that is buying the Bordeaux bottle that has a little bit 1 centimeter higher, is he not wasting his money? I mean, who's going to notice? As a consumer, am I going to notice the difference between a 1 centimeter lower or higher bottle in the bottle? So yes, we need some level of standardization, but we also need producers, if they believe that this is one of the paths to follow. Why buy a mold that is probably more expensive because he has to buy it in lower quantities? Why buy a bottle that will not have distinctiveness enough in the shelf to be worth the difference? So you might as well go for a Burgundy bottle or a normal standard Burgundy bottle that anyway, it's what it's used mostly anyway.
But you've got different glass manufacturers trying to differentiate themselves. By standardizing it, they lose that ability to differentiate. So, you know, you've got O&I or Encircle or any of these other glass manufacturers. They're always looking to say, look, we're better because our glass is, you know, 100 grams lighter, or our glass is 100 grams heavier. You know, there's a whole cornucopia of difference that people want for some reason?
But the, first of all, okay, there are very various answers to that. First of all, again, there's not enough differences in those bottles that from a marketing and brand standpoint, the consumer will notice.
But so that's
the first thing.
They'll notice slightly different colored bottles. And, you know, if you've got a shelf and it's got 20 bottles,
the colors,
and they're all slightly different color and slightly different heights, you'll notice that and it'll look a little bit higgly-piggly.
But those same glass producers are saying that they are doing strong efforts to decarbonize their industry. So you got to walk your talk. And one thing that is very important, but we'll go to the park example in a second because that's a very important one as well. Verallia, which is one of the biggest glass producers that we know of, is involved at least in 3 projects that we know of reusing bottles. In fact, one of the biggest projects in France for reusable wine bottle schemes, which is a company called Boabou, Verallia is a shareholder, invested recently in this project. So at least Verallia is involved in reusable projects in France, in Germany, in Spain, and more. So they are looking into this. They could even have, why not have a side business, so to speak, in which they wash their own bottles.
Yeah, but their business is producing glass. They're not going to say, look, we're going to be able to create this bottle that will mean we'll go out of business. They've got a vested interest not to really go down this route. I mean, they are going.
They are doing it. As I said, Verallia is actually, they are in more than 3 projects. For example, the project that I told you in Oregon with a company called Revino, OI was the company, it's in partnership with OI. Verallia is really part of several consortiums working on this. Is it greenwash? I mean, greenwash is more and more legislated. Climate change is not Santa Claus. What we're experiencing every day requires us to rethink business as usual. So it cannot be greenwash. We cannot afford greenwash anymore. And there is another way. So again, of course, their business is doing producing glass. But why not wash glass? Why not even control more that part of the value chain? It's a new business. Look, how long is it going to take for them to decarbonize their furnaces? What can happen faster? Because wine producers are not packaging specialists. And so even from a carbon calculation standpoint, the packaging comes in scope 3. So the company responsible for that scope is actually the glass producer. This is to be taken seriously, and recycling is not, we're not going to recycle our way out of this mess. And this is serious. This is not to be taken lightly.
Oh, no, I agree. But I think they ultimately will still want to be a glass manufacturer, not a glass washer.
Yeah.
And I think that their ultimate game will be to decarbonize the manufacturing process through hydrogen or electric furnaces or whatever the solution that comes out the most economic. I have no confidence that someone whose business model is to produce glass will try and do something so their business model doesn't work. They just won't do that. And anything that they do beyond that, I think, will be, they're just pandering, trying to make it look like they're doing something. And I think it's greenwashing. I think their main goal should be to decarbonize their manufacturing process. Personally, that's just the way I look at it. If I was a shareholder in OI and the CEO said, look, mate, don't worry, all these furnaces, we're going to shut them all down and we're going to wash bottles.
No, but that's not at all what we're saying, okay? At all. Of course, they will continue to produce glass. And Verallia, if I'm not wrong, just launched or just announced one of their furnaces being fueled with renewable energy. But that will take a long time, and that's a huge, very, very expensive process. What we mean is that this is also a solution that should be on the table, and they should be part of the solution, and they are being. you can call me naive for thinking that this shouldn't be, that it should not be just greenwashing, just because I'm seeing some players getting being a part of this conversation, or not conversation, of these projects that are coming to life in a variety of countries, because we cannot afford to. They cannot afford to. Mm. And greenwashing, and if not for the right reasons, which would be the fact that we really need to, it's not just about decarbonizing the industry. Again, it's about, and I think, and actually, it's not just about carbon. It's about the way we use resources that we don't have, natural resources. So it's even more than, it goes beyond the carbon. Because, for example, when we're talking about, and let's talk about resources. For example, sand is the second most used resource in the world after water. You have the United Nations saying we are running out of sand. So it's more than just carbon. It's the planet. It's, again, it's ecosystems, it's biodiversity, it's water, and it's carbon, because carbon is part of it all. So it's way beyond that.
But you can use up to 80% recycled glass in your furnaces. So if your furnace is decarbonized and you're using a large portion of recycled glass, you're not really using that sand. So you could get to a situation where you're running quite a low input for a lot of output.
You can and you should. And that's always, and all these solutions should be embraced, not just one, not in any way, of course, not just reused, and that will not always be possible. Okay, so that's one of the solutions. But if you're serious about the crisis we're living in, first, you shouldn't be greenwashing, because you really need to take this seriously. And second, legislation on greenwashing is becoming stricter and stricter, which is very good.
Mm.
So hopefully, if that is to be the case, hopefully, call me naive, and fair enough, I prefer to be naive and believe and continue to convey this message. But okay, all those solutions must be addressed, not just one, all of them.
Okay, we met at the London Wine Fair yesterday, actually, so I'm not sure when this podcast is going up. It won't be for a couple more months, but while I was there, there was a glass manufacturer there from China, and their big thing was making small run, very unique bottles. And China's glass manufacturing is quite a carbon intensive industry. And then you're shipping these bottles all around the world. Like I think it was Jason Haas was telling me that something like 80% of the glass in America, wine bottles, come from China. It's like, my goodness me, that's just ridiculous. You're just shipping sand all around the world.
Yeah, it's not just shipping sand, it's shipping empty space.
Yeah, I know, it was ridiculous. Because
you're shipping empty space. So you're paying not only for the bottle, but you're paying for the empty space because of the shape of the bottle.
Yeah. All they're doing is shipping their carbon footprint to China and having a higher carbon footprint for the pleasure of doing that. So, you know, there are lots... You're seeing people doing things that are actively almost in opposite of what you're trying to achieve.
I know. But we have two choices, Chris. Either we focus on the problem or we focus on the solution. Mm. And it's just that simple. For example, looking at this particular topic that brought us here today, we can either focus on the immense challenges that it has and listening to the amount of people saying that this is not possible, or then working together with the people that are already doing it. Some of them, I remember when we had the meeting with in our last collaborative network, and we had people starting, and then we had Vin Richard just listening to these people that are starting these projects, and like, yeah, I mean, for us, this is every day, this is what we do every day. There's no science in it, because we've been doing it for decades. Or Bernard Graffet from Belgium, the same. So we can either focus on the challenges and the problems, or we can focus on the possibilities. And that's way more motivating, and that's way more inspiring to know that this is possible. This is happening in a variety of places. So I can either choose to focus on the spotlights and bring all these people together and make it happen, or, oh, it's going to be so difficult.
You've been looking at this now for a year or two?
Yeah, more than two, yeah.
Yeah, have you got a solution that you think will work on a mass scale?
I think the examples that are coming in from France are working at scale, especially because, for a variety of reasons. First, because there are companies that have been doing this at scale, and we're talking about millions of bottles. We have legislation in place, and that's crucial. What we are starting to believe that can happen at scale is not thinking of closed loops, is an open loop, is that the bottle that already is in place, that the bottle you have at home that you'll be throwing in a deposit place somewhere, can go into a scheme. So that one is not happening yet, but that can happen at scale. Yes, we believe that it can happen at scale. It doesn't mean that it can happen today, and there's work to be done. But why not? Why not use the amount of bottles that are out there, and instead of putting them and crushing them, washing them and putting them back on the loop, and having someone sell reusable bottles, for example.
Just going back to the collection process, we recycle our bottles. Well, we think we're recycling them. Who knows what's actually happening with them? They're probably going to landfill. But we put them into the glass recycling, and you put them in there, and you can hear the bottles break as they go in. And I'm just wondering what sort of damage rate you're getting. Do you know any?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, because the collection of glass, you know, I'm sitting there chucking loads of bottles in. We get through a lot of wine here. And we just hear them break. Break. And I'm sitting there going, I know that they're not being reused, because they're going to have to be ground up, because they'll be shattered, there'll be chips, that sort of thing. So do you guys have any knowledge about what sort of ratios
get broken? We don't, but that's a very good point. And that, luckily, we have several players that have been doing this to whom we can ask.
Yeah.
For sure. Namely, for example, in Styria, because the bottles go into the deposit schemes at the supermarket. So a deposit containers at the supermarkets.
All right then, Martha, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Cheers.